Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Taranita, and I don't really feel I've got any words of wisdom or anything like that to dispense in my short talk. In fact, instead, I'm just going to really express how this whole scenario has left me feeling, really, for the last few months, I suppose. When I say scenario, I mean the climate change crisis, really. And in particular, it's left me feeling confused, frustrated, and with a certain amount of guilt as well. Confused because no one really knows precisely what's going to happen. Frustrated because many people don't seem to be taking it adequately seriously. And guilt because of my own particular part in this, which leads to a certain amount of despair, I suppose, and a sense of needing to do something. So to talk about the confusion bit first, I'm not going to come up with any facts and figures. I'm sure we'll hear some facts and figures, and you probably know many facts and figures anyway. And in any case, I'm not trying to convert you in any way, because I'm sure I'd be preaching to the converted. You're here this morning, I imagine, because you're concerned. It's difficult to say even what the best case scenario would be in 20 years, 50 years. Whatever the best case scenario is likely to be, it's still pretty bad by the seams of things. But it is difficult and it is confusing. I work in IT, and it always used to be said that in IT, there were two areas that demanded the greatest computing resources, that they built the biggest computers for. And that was for modelling nuclear explosions, so they didn't have to set off atomic weapons, they could model it instead. And for the weather, to try and predict the weather, because that's how complex the climate is. But one of the first things that completely convinced me that climate change was a fact that has already happened, as well as continue to happen, was listening to Gardener's Question Time, which I don't make a habit of. I'm not much of a gardener, but I just happen to have it on and happen to overhear it. And they were just talking. People were asking them, you know, as you would imagine, people asking them about their begonias or whatever. And the gardener, these expert gardeners, would reply. And they were replying several times. They mentioned climate change. They mentioned that, as the springs are getting earlier these days, as the temperatures are changing these days. And there was no angle. They didn't have any agenda. They weren't trying to convince anybody. They were just expressing the simple observation, the fact, actually, that they had observed as gardeners over the decades that they'd been gardening. So, you know, it is happening. There's no question of that. And that was very convincing for me. It's very frustrating, I think, because it seems to me, if we were to hear all of a sudden on the news, breaking news, an asteroid is hurtling towards the Earth, it will impact the Earth in 50 years' time, and it will have an enormous impact on humanity and all other life on the planet. I imagine people would be running around saying, you know, don't panic. And we're urging the authorities to do something about this urgently. And yet, essentially, you know, a very similar situation with the environment. That's essentially the, you know, what's going to happen in terms of the environment. And yet people don't seem to be doing much about it. There doesn't seem to be much of a sense of urgency among many people, and certainly among the establishment. And it's just very perplexing, really. And I posted this thought on Facebook, and there was a number of responses, and one person responded with the observation that, well, people are selfish, which may well be true, but they are also very generous at the same time. At this time of year, for example, people, including myself, spend a great deal of money on their families and friends, and particularly the next generation or their grandchildren. They spend a lot of money on youngsters and so on. People would, in fact, give up their lives to protect their children or their grandchildren. So people can be very generous indeed. So why, then, are we not acting to save our children's and our grandchildren's futures? It's perplexing. I think some people maybe haven't taken on board the full implications of climate change. I get the impression that maybe some people think it means, you know, a few hot summers, a few more storms, you know, the sea level might rise a few centimetres. But I live on a hill, so. Whereas, you know, the reality is, well, it is much different, isn't it? Loss of habitat means, as we've just heard, you know, it's been reported that 200 species of animals, of creatures, are disappearing every day. And this is just mind-boggling. And I think of creatures like lions and tigers, which are so iconic. We've got one in the shrine room now. Well, two lions in the shrine room now. That's just how iconic they are. Polar bears, elephants, all of these creatures threatened by a number of things, including climate change. And I just think, that in itself would be enough to motivate you, I would have thought, to motivate me anyway, to do something about it. But fair enough, maybe many people say, well, I'll never see a tiger anyway, so, you know, it doesn't really impact me too much. Okay, well, then there's migration. People seem very concerned about migration, immigration, and what have you. And we've seen in the news recently, there's a caravan of migrants moving from Central America through Mexico up to the United States, which is getting, you know, many Americans very concerned. And it's been reported often that this is due to violence and so on in Central America. But there was a report as well from an embedded journalist in that caravan. And he says, in fact, many of the people there are moving because they farmed at a particular spot for generations. And now they can't farm there anymore. Because of climate change, things just don't grow there anymore. These people simply have no choice but to move. If they don't move, they will die. And so this is, in part at least, as a result of climate change. And of course, this is only the beginning. You know, there's Mexico, of course, is a country with great population. I think maybe about 100 million people, not sure exactly. I meant to look it up, but I forgot. Anyway, there's a lot of people live in Mexico, and it's very hot at the moment. So it wouldn't take much climate change for them to struggle for food resources and to start, obviously, their eyes would go northwards, and probably their feet would start moving northwards as well. And of course, the same in Europe as well. You know, we've had migration into Europe as a result of various issues, partly violence. But when climate change really takes a hold, there are likely to be millions of people looking to Europe to escape the situation where they simply can't find food to eat. So I would have thought that would be enough to motivate people as well. Then, of course, there's food itself. We don't produce enough food in this country to feed ourselves. You know, in the Second World War, which isn't that long ago, really, we were quite close to being starved out because we can't produce enough food of our own. And clearly climate change is going to have a huge effect on production of food resources. So it really will be the case that we could struggle to feed ourselves in the coming years as a result of climate change. We do depend on Southern Europe for producing much of our food, parts of Africa, well, all over the world, really. And a lot of those places experiencing climate change inevitably will not be able to produce the food in the same way they do now. And if that weren't enough, that would be enough as well on its own, I would have thought. But anyway, if that weren't enough, then we've got sea level rises as well. And as we know, many of the largest cities in the world are at the seaside, basically. Shanghai, Mumbai, New York, London, and so on. So any significant sea rise is going to have a huge impact on millions and millions of people. And if we just look at this country, because I think many people are only interested in this country at this moment in time, then, unfortunately, but if we just look at this country, if London were to get significant flooding, we can't afford to fix it. You know, this country, wealthy country though it apparently is, couldn't afford to fix London if it broke. And if there is a significant sea rise level in the rise in the level of the sea, then that's what's going to happen. So again, that in itself would probably be enough. But so there's lots of things. I'm not sure if people fully appreciate that. Many people are, of course, concerned, but most people don't seem to be that concerned. After the UN report was mentioned during the meditation was announced, we had a budget in this country shortly afterwards, which said virtually nothing about the environment whatsoever. There is lots of being done on research, I think, to look at answers to some of these problems, genetic modification and so on. But it is interesting, I find, that we're more interested in some ways in looking at ways to patch things up than to actually deal with the root cause, which is often the case, I think, with things like medication. If we've got a problem, often we want to take a tablet or a pill or something like that rather than deal with the actual underlying cause. That tends to be something of our nature, I think. And then moving on to guilt. I am a part of the problem, clearly. Mostly, I suppose, the biggest thing for me would be holidays, flying in aircraft. And whilst I do offset the carbon, nevertheless, it would be a lot better not to fly at all. And so there is the risk, isn't it? You know, I do feel about that. And there is a risk of, if you start talking about climate change, then, well, you could easily be branded a hypocrite in some ways, because we could all do more. And whatever you do, you could always do more. It's the same, I think, with vegetarianism, for example. I'm a vegetarian, and I do feel some guilt about not being vegan. I try to reduce the dairy that I consume and so on. But then when you talk about vegetarianism, you can be accused of being hypocritical because you consume milk, because you might have leather shoes or what have you. So there is always a risk of, if you do stand up, then you are likely to attract some criticism, and some of it might be justified, you know, because it's true, I do compromise. We all have to compromise to an extent, we all have to live, and we all create a footprint on this earth. So to what extent, how do we deal with that? So hence, some despair, I suppose, or overwhelm, you might say. There was an article written by my preceptor, Vasantra, an order member in Tri Ratna, about overwhelm, dealing with overwhelm, 20 points for dealing with overwhelm, which I thought was very well timed. We do need to do something, but what? What do we do? I'm interested in the Extinction Rebellion and taking action to raise awareness of this issue. Peaceful protest has been quite successful in some significant ways, such as in India, suffragettes, saving the whale, preventing nuclear dumping into the sea. And I'm old enough to remember Greenpeace in the 70s or 80s, when they were regarded as complete weirdos, really, when they were campaigning to stop dumping of nuclear waste into the sea and saving whales and so on. But now they're much more respected. And clearly now they can be seen to be having been on the right side of the argument, and the establishment was on the wrong side of the argument. That's what most people would probably agree now, as is the case with suffragettes, as is the case with Indian independence and so on. So it's clear that there are examples of taking action, peaceful action, that have been successful in the past. But I am concerned about backlash. I am concerned about the effects of society. I think one has to be very careful in taking disruptive action in society. Everybody's got things that they're unhappy about in society, and if we all decided to act upon that and disrupt society because of our unhappiness, we would end up living in chaos. So we do have to be very careful and selective, I suppose, in terms of what we take action about. And there is a danger of tipping over into anger as well. So again, a bit of a dilemma. What's the correct thing to do? What's the right thing to do? What's the best thing to do? But we do need to do something. We can't just meditate our way out of this. I was very impressed with David Attenborough's speech at the UN climate conference, which was probably about a month ago now. I'd heard some criticism of him for his TV shows, that it didn't go on about the environment as much as it might have. But I was very impressed with his talk in the UN. He is extremely highly regarded, and it was an extremely visible speech, talk, and it was quite well reported as well. Maybe the indifference of our leaders, utter indifference in some ways, may lead to a backlash, which could work to the benefit of action against climate change. Perhaps, who knows, maybe 2019 will be the year when things finally get real and take this seriously.